Carrie Malkolik. And my sobriety date is March 14th of 2001. And I have a sponsor, Erica P., and I have a home group, the Midtown Group, and I want to thank you guys, and Billy, even though he's not here, for asking me to speak. It's always an honor and a privilege to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, because there were definitely times in my life where I was not asked to do anything or was asked to not show up. So it's really an honor, and I guess I will start from the beginning. I grew up outside of Baltimore in Ellicott City, Maryland, and I grew up in a loving home, you know, in a house that my dad built, you know, in a lovely neighborhood, you know, and my sister is here as well with me. And, you know, we had a good upbringing. There's nothing in my upbringing that I could point to, like, why I'm alcoholic or something that would, you know, motivate me to drink in that way to escape anything that had happened. But for me, I never felt right. I always felt like I didn't fit in with my peers and that everyone else, you know, I joke, got the handbook that one day in second grade when I was absent, you know, about how to live life and make friends and, like, interact with other people and be appropriate. And I didn't get it, and I had no idea. I felt like there was a barrier between me and the people around me that I just couldn't connect. And, you know, I would be in the car and I think that's my house or that's my car, that's my family, you know what I mean? And not because anything was wrong, I just felt so off on the inside, and I would, you know, look at your outsides and they didn't match my insides, and, you know, I just didn't feel right. And like I said, it's not from lack of love or good upbringing, you know, for sure. And I started off not drinking. I started off, you know, with minor nuisance activities such as, you know, shoplifting, a chapstick at the grocery store, or whatever little activity that it was to get some sort of change in how I felt, you know. And for me, I started getting into my drinking. You know, I'd had, you know, drinks here and there, but I really started getting into my drinking around the time that I was 14, and that was also the time that my parents separated. And you know, for me, my dad was a disciplinarian, and so when he left, I became a latchkey kid. My mom went back to work full time. It became very easy for me to do what I wanted when I wanted. And you know, I had done well through school, but it just became like these kids look like they're having more fun and that they, you know, feel all right. And drinking fixed all of that madness on the inside. It made me feel like I fit in, made me feel good enough, pretty enough, smart enough, you know, enough. Even though regardless of any achievements I had, they never filled that, you know, God-sized hole, which I, you know, I couldn't have described at the time as that's what it was. But, you know, I always felt wanting, and alcohol fixed that for me. And I could say, you know, I wasn't thinking about what you're going to say, and then I'm going to say this, but then you're going to say this, and I'm going to, you know, it wasn't like that, or it wasn't like this girl's walking towards me in the hallway, is she going to smile, is she going to say hi, should I, you know what I mean? It wasn't that kind of, like, self-centered madness going on. It was just, like, relief, and I could be who I wanted to be, and it didn't matter. And, you know, it was all well and good for a little while. There really weren't a lot of consequences. I'm sure my mother was displeased about it, but there weren't any, you know, and that was, you know, hurtful behavior on my part, but there were no real consequences of, like, me getting in trouble or any real difficulty. It was still fun then, and you know, my parents divorced when I was 16, and so everything was kind of final. We moved and went to a new school, and I really became who I wanted to be. You know, I put on my ego and put on a whole different persona of who I was. No one knows me here. I can be whoever I want to be. And I did that, you know, and I got into, you know, some other outside things. For me, I don't like to speak about my other outside things from the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous. I really, truly believe in our singleness of purpose, but for me, it's part of my story. And I like to say that my school bus didn't stop at the liquor store, and the girl in the bathroom never asked me for ID. You know what I mean? And so for me, being 16 years old, I could walk into the bathroom and buy just about whatever I wanted to change the way I felt. But and for me, a lot of that stuff was I could show up, and I could still kind of look somewhat together, and I could predict the results when I did, you know, other things. Whereas when I drank, I could never tell you what was going to happen. I could have one or two drinks and go about my day, or I could way overshoot the mark and not know where I was, wake up in strange places. And that wasn't happening yet at that time. You know, I went from, you know, someone who was in honors and gifted and talented classes, scoring, you know, very high on IQ tests and standardized testing, to barely graduating high school in that, you know, 4 years or three or four years. I barely graduating. I was playing the card. You know, teachers were concerned. They would ask me, you know, what's going on. And I would play the card, you know what I mean? My dad's not home, and things were really tough, and I would cry, whatever I had to do. And it wasn't at that time that I really had an emotional attachment to it that I could get to. I couldn't get to that place of knowing how I felt about it, but I knew that it would get you off my back about whatever was going on and get you to look over here and kind of distract you from what was really going on with me, because I instinctively knew that I'm not 21. This is not technically something I should be doing, and I'm going to protect it with everything that I have, you know. And so I would play that, you know, divorce card. I'd play the, you know, my mom's working full time and I'm a latchkey kid, you know, whatever it is. And like I said, I didn't really feel anything about those things. I thought they were great because it meant I got to do what I wanted. And when my mom was out, I would throw parties at her house. You know what I mean? Trash the house, like whatever. You know, I was out running the streets. You know, and I didn't, I would have told you that I didn't hurt anybody. You know what I mean? And that's not even the half of where things progress to, but I still thought that everything was fine and that if anyone's being hurt, it's me and it's fine and it's my life and I'll do what I want, you know? And, you know, from there, like I said, I barely graduated high school and I had no real higher aspirations. I went to work in food service because if you know about food service industry, you can drink whenever you want. You get cash money in your pocket every night. I'm not a drinker who can... I'm not a functional alcoholic. I'm not someone that can show up. I'm not someone that can pay bills or look like they have their life together. If I'm drinking, everyone knows something's wrong, you know? And so I needed cash money every day. I needed an environment that supported my drinking, and that's what I did. You know, I started working at restaurants, whether it was, like, as a hostess or bussing tables, waiting tables, and I would take that cash, and it would immediately be gone, you know? And still, I was kind of holding things together a little bit at that point. And really, over the next couple of years, it went down really fast. And, you know, I moved closer to Baltimore City, which, still not being 21, afforded me a lot of opportunities to go down there and find things, bigger and better things that I thought were going to get me where I wanted to go. I'm not someone that will ask you, what is this? What's it going to do to me? You know what I mean? I will watch you and how you ingest it or whatever, and I will follow suit and find out, you know, because I know that it's going to change my perception. It's going to change the way I feel about me, you know, and it's going to squash all my insecurities, all of the tapes that my brain tells me about myself. And so that's where it got to, and I was drinking as much as I could still and trying to do that to supplement. But, you know, getting people to go to the liquor store for you is not always the easiest thing to find. And, you know, for me what happened is I ended up after that moving in with a guy who would take care of me, you know what I mean? I was barely working, but he would supply cash and alcohol and whatever else we were getting into. You know, and things got really bad at that point because I didn't have to show up. I didn't have to, you know what I mean? I really got into my illness at that point. And when that relationship ended and I moved back to my mom's house, it was very clear that something was not right. You know, they were calling about repoing my car. And I was like, oh, I thought I had X number of months before that happened. You know what I mean? I had no real, like, oh, I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I always had an excuse or a circumstance as to why, you know, this was happening. And I ran through my parents because for a little while they were like, oh, I understand. Like, you're just getting on your own. And I would get money here and there from them. But really, when I moved home, it was clear, and they had an intervention. My dad and stepmom came, and my mom and my sister, you know what I mean? When they're all together, you know something's going on, and when you put those three in the same room. And so, you know, I went to my first outpatient detox in Baltimore City, and when I went in there, I was 80 pounds. I was yellow. You know, I wasn't showering, I wasn't brushing my teeth, I wasn't taking care of myself in any real way. I had nothing to my name. You know, at that point, my dad took my car from me because he co-signed my loan. You know what I mean? So he took the car to pay the payment, so he wasn't ruining his credit. So I have, you know, no possessions or money or any kind of savings to my name. I'm totally emaciated. And I still thought I'm a little young for all this. You know what I mean? Like, for this whole detox thing. And, you know, I'm not even 21. I'm not even, you know, I was so delusional about the way that I was living. I really couldn't see that I was on my last legs, you know. And I completed that detox, and I stayed dry for about 2 weeks after that. And then what I didn't have words for then, I still called it the madness, you know, but it was restless, irritable, and discontent. I did not have a solution. I wasn't drinking. I wasn't getting into anything else, and I just felt like I have to get out of this house. You know what I mean? And as a female alcoholic, what happens sometimes happened. I ended up at a meeting of another fellowship, and there was a guy there, and I sort of weaseled my way into having my car for a little bit, and so I had a car, and he had money, and the madness was on me, and I was back off to the races, you know, because I didn't get it. Like, I was at that, I guess, jumping off place, and I was there for a little while where I couldn't imagine living my life the way that I was living it. I knew it was miserable. You know, I would beg God to die. I'd beg God to not let me wake up in the morning. You know, but I couldn't imagine living life sober either, because that 2 weeks was so unbearable for me. Like, I've heard people describe it as like walking through a cheese grater. And that's how I felt, just so unbearable in my own skin that, you know, my sister talks about it. I'd rather slam my head against a brick wall over and over again than feel the way that I felt sober. And, you know, so I was back out for a few months. That was probably August, September of 2000. So I was back out. I managed to get, I don't know how the circumstances came about, but there was another family, you know, intervention right around Christmas. And this is the kind of delusional thinking that I talk about. And this sounds like really, I don't want to say stupid, but you'll get it when I say it. I went to a detox, again, you know, whatever, 7-day outpatient detox, and then was preparing to go into a 28-day program. And I thought, well, you know, these other things are my problem, but I'm pretty sure I don't really like smoking crack, so I'll smoke crack before I go in here, so that something's going on, but I don't really like it, and so it's not my main problem. You know, it's not like I'm drinking or doing these other things that I really thought were the issue. You know, and like, it's the most delusional thinking that I can like look at now, but then it made like so much sense to me, and I did that and went into a 28-day inpatient in Laurel at Reality House, and I was there for about 2 weeks before they asked me to leave, because at that point, I was probably maybe 85 pounds at that point, and I was still yellow, I was still dirty, and I was belligerent and defiant and mean and nasty. I'll cuss you before I would, you know what I mean? All I knew were cuss words at that point. You know, because when I'm out there, I'm out there. I'm not around people that my parents would approve of. I'm around people that are my lower companions, or I'm their lower companion, depending on where we're at in my drinking. And, you know, so I really had no social skills left. I was really just, and I was done. I wasn't interested in that program. I was there to get out of trouble again. I still thought that I got this, and that, you know, if I just, you know, take this couple of weeks to kind of detox, that once I go back out there, I'll be able to drink like a lady, or control this other stuff, or get away from these things, but be over here with this. You know, I thought it was like, if I could find the right balance of what I was doing and be able to show up. And what happened for me is, after I got kicked out, my sister picked me up, and we went out. You know, I was like, well, now that I'm detoxed, I can go try to drink and have a good night with drinking. And I drank probably one of the short flask bottles of Jack Daniels and some Boone's Farm. That's the kind of, love some Boone's Farm. And and drank some of that and went out to this under 21 club so my sister could go. You know what I mean? And we go there, and on the way home, she wrecked her car end over end off an on-ramp into a drainage ditch from 695 to 95. And you know, our mom came and got us. You know, some gentlemen came by and cleaned out the car for us. You know what I mean? Because at that time, that's what I call those kind of men. You know what I mean? And cleaned out the car for us. And, you know, there's a whole thing with the state troopers. We managed to work that out. You know what I mean? And our mom came and got us, and we went home. You know, and I love my mom, but she was probably the biggest enabler that I ever had. You know, she would pick me up. She would take me home, put me back together as best she could. And And the next day I got a call from this guy that I had been in rehab with, and he asked me what I was doing, and I said, I want to go to the city. You know, and yeah, I have safety glass cuts from head to toe. I broke my window during the accident with my body, you know. I was ready to go, you know, get the best painkiller that I knew how to get. And he was like, okay, that's cool, but we have to go to this meeting. Well, like I said, I've been to meetings before, and I would go messed up. And maybe if I was really messed up and feeling really bad, I might share and cry and then leave before you could help me. You know what I mean? Just to get some of the madness off. And so I was like, yeah, that's no problem. You know what I mean? Because I didn't understand the gravity of you know, those actions, and that these people are really trying to be sober, and me showing up messed up, even though I might not be disturbing the meeting, might still affect them some way. You know, so I was like, okay, that's cool. Well, he and his sponsor picked me up and took me straight to a Saturday night AA meeting. And, you know, I guess I'll give you the dichotomy of what I looked like and where this meeting was and what was going on. At that time, I was wearing my Timberland boots, my men's extra large black sweatpants, like rugged wear, like big bulky, you know, sweatshirts and big men's, you know, snowboarding jacket, you know, right? Still, you know, having the same attitude and deportment of, you know, someone running the streets in the city. And I was taken to a Saturday night meeting in Chevy Chase, which is a much different environment. You know, if you know where that is, you understand the difference of this whole setup. So I walk in, and, you know, everyone's dressed appropriately, you know what I mean? You know, probably like everyone here is tonight. Nothing special, but dressed in clean clothes and an appropriate attire. They were clean, you know, showered, their hair was nice. They were smiling, they were happy, and I did not understand. You know what I mean? I'm like, who are these people? And, in my head, I was like, well, it must be really nice that you guys are, like, blowing coke off your mom's Tiffany platters, but I have real problems. You know what I mean? Like, I don't live my, you know, all these rich kids whose parents, you know, just can't afford their habit. Like, I have real issues, is what I thought. I would do anything to not relate to people, because I thought this wasn't my solution, and that's great for you guys, but it's not for me. And what happened is a testament to what my home group does and what I'm sure this group does. You know what I mean? After the meet, someone shoved me up at halftime to get a 24-hour shift. Rightly so. You know what I mean? I think, how do they know I'm new? It's very clear that I was new. And, you know, someone shoved me up to get a 24-hour chip at halftime, and after the meeting, the women surrounded me. You know what I mean? They wanted my phone number. They want to know, you know, where are you staying? What are you doing tonight? What are you doing tomorrow? Let me get your phone number. And if you're an alcoholic like I am, I think, what do they want from me? I don't have anything. You know what I mean? Because when I'm out there drinking, other women are competition for me. They want something of mine, whatever it is. We're in competition. And it's not someone that I'm going to be friends with or hang around with. And so I'm thinking at this point, I have nothing. You know what I mean? There's no, so what do you want from me? And they didn't want anything. You know what I mean? And I get that today. I did not like women when I got sober. You know, and today the women in my life are, you know, have really carried me and helped me through a lot of different things, and they saved my life, and I love them to death, and I have, like, true relationships with them. But at the time, I wasn't so sure. But the reality for me was that my mom had kicked me out, and I was living with my dad and my stepmom in her house. And so it was quite a new ball game for me, because I was now on a curfew at 20 years old. I was on a curfew. I did not have access to my car, which was sitting right out front. I got to see it. Could not drive it. Could not touch it. And so the only way I was getting out of that house and not doing chores for my stepmom and, like, going and running errands with her and stuff, which, you know, when you're 20 years old and you're, like, kind of detoxing, that's, like, the lamest thing you could possibly think of to be signed up for. You know what I mean? So the only way I was getting out of that house is if somebody came and got me for a meeting. That was the only way I was leaving, and that's the only way I signed up. You know what I mean? Because suddenly my schedule was wide open. And so I'm like, yeah, let's go to the meeting. Because at first, I'll tell you what, I wasn't really interested in recovery. I was interested in this big group of shiny, happy young people. There's probably cute boys here, you know what I mean? And these chicks seem all right, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it was really more of a social scene for me up front. And I have to be honest about that. I didn't get serious about the steps right away at all. And what happened is I slowly went insane sober. And, you know, at first I enjoyed the excitement and the, you know, staying out and all that kind of stuff that we do when we're new and just hanging out and you know, being crazy and new and whatever. And, but I became interested in the steps. I got a sponsor and I, you know, I started reading. But for me, when I got here, I was functionally illiterate. For someone who is doing so well in school and then to get to this place where I'll read a paragraph and it's gone. And I have to read it again, and it's gone. And read it again, and it's gone. You know, and so it took me a long time to get into really reading the big book. And my sponsor would sit down with me, and we'd go, you know, a couple sentences, and she'd talk about it or explain, or if I didn't get it, well, you know how you told me this happened? Well, that's exactly what this is talking about. Or, you know what I mean, really make it very clear about what the book was talking about. And when I started slowly getting into the steps, I'm someone who is especially stupid and stubborn when it comes to my own recovery. And sometimes, you know, my sponsor has to get the cattle prod and really just nail me into you know, getting things done. Because I'm someone who will settle for, you know, I don't know where it is in the book. I'm not that good. But, you know, there's a part where Bill talks about the good is the enemy of the best. And I will settle for good every time. Because it's, you know what I mean, I'm comfortable. I don't have to exert myself. I don't have to do, you know, extra, but see, I did this, so isn't that good enough? And my sponsor, thank God, does not accept that from me, and none of my sponsors have. And, you know, for me, I was with that first sponsor for 3 or 4 years, and she decided she was not alcoholic. And then I, you know, I got her sponsor at the time, Mike, and I was with Mike for somewhere in the same period, 3 to 4 years, and then Mike died. And then what happened for me is I was kind of sponsorless for about a year, because in that time, he was dying. So while, yeah, he was my sponsor, he was not available to hear my inventory or give me direction in that way. And so at the, you know, at the end of that year, kind of coming into the summer, I started realizing that, because I'm someone who will think, like, I can maintain a certain level of sanity. You know what I mean? I have activities to do, I have service positions, I have a job, I go to school. On a certain level, I can maintain my life without, you know, too much, you know, outside stuff coming in. As long as things kind of stay okay, I'm okay. But I started to realize that my reactions to life were going back to just the way I used to be. I had, what really shook me was I got into a verbal altercation at a gas station with some girl, and I could not believe it. You know what I mean? This is how I would have acted when I was drinking. You know, I will not let her look at me that way or talk to me that way. You know what I mean? And this is at years sober. And it really shook me. And I went and talked to this woman, Erica, and we really got into the steps. I went through again. I started at the first step, and I wrote out my whole story. You know, and I got back into working the steps, and I did an eighth, you know, fourth and fifth step with her, an eighth step with her, did some more amends work. You know, and she's pushing me to do things. I was totally against going back to school. Not that I'd ever gone to college, but I was sure I didn't like it. You know, and seems like a whole lot of work, you know, and I'm someone, like I said, that's lazy and stubborn and wants to just get by with whatever will slide me through the door. And she pushed, you know, and she pushed me to work on that. And that's something that I've been doing now for like a year. And it's tough, but it feels good for me when I can, like, actually know that I put in the work and got the grade and did something esteemable. And, you know, she's pushing. My mother is someone who, like I said, she enabled me, and I love her, but she is not mentally stable, you know. And so that relationship has been very difficult with me, and I've gone back and forth with it in my sobriety. My sponsor has pushed me to, you know, through inventorying and journaling and writing, get to a place where I can have a level of compassion for that, even if it's, you know, even if I'm being, you know, attacked or guilted or, you know, verbally assaulted, you know what I mean, that I can come from a place of, that I'm not rageful about it anymore, that I can really come from a place of, like, this isn't, you know, this isn't what's really happening, and this is not my mother treating me this way, that this is something outside of this, and that I can come from a place of love and tolerance and, you know, try to get to that place. Also, during my sobriety, my sister got sober. She got sober about 18 months after I did. And this is someone that, looking back, you know, there were physical altercations, verbal altercations. You know what I mean? Knockdown, drag out battles in my house. You know what I mean? Now, we don't look like those two girls today. But I can tell you that, you know, my home was a battleground many a day. And today we have probably, I mean, she's my best friend. We talk to each other on, like, a daily basis in some form or another. We were joking about before the meeting, whether you know, on the phone, in person, you know, whatever it is, we're in constant contact. And that was not something that could have happened when I was drinking or when she was drinking, you know. And I'm sure it's terrifying for a family to know that not one but both of your daughters are out running the streets, running amok, driving drunk, you mean, whatever it is. And my parents don't worry about where I am today. You know, my dad doesn't, I have a great relationship with my dad. This is a man that I would have told you that I hated, that he left me and my mother and my sister, you know, that he didn't care about us, that the only time I would call him was if I needed money. You know, and that he's unreasonable, or, you know what I mean, in my mind. And I have a great relationship with him and his wife today, and I consider her like a second mother, even though they got married, you know, when I was like 20 years old. I go over there every other Wednesday for dinner. Check this. Oh, wow. I have got a lot of time. I went way fast. You know, this is someone that, you know, and I told this woman she wasn't my mother. You know what I mean? I was drunk at their wedding. I was, you know what I mean? And today I go there every other Wednesday and sit down and have dinner with them and talk about, you know, my life with them. And we have a great relationship. And he calls me and I call him and he tells me little funny things or sends me cute emails, you know. And that wasn't happening. I'm not someone that is willing to put in the work for that kind of a relationship with someone else. You know, I'll call, you know, I'll see you at Christmas, you know what I mean, or whatever, rather than actually, you know, and that's Alcoholics Anonymous, that is not me, you know, on my own, I'm so selfish and self-centered, and, you know, I'm willing to just, you know, kind of close my world in on itself, and, you know, think that I've got this, that I'm fine, things are okay, and I don't need to worry about all this outside stuff, or that this isn't AA, and this isn't about my drinking. You know what I mean? That this is outside stuff that you guys don't have to talk with me about. You know, but really all of my life is something that I need to talk about with my sponsor, whether it's relationships with others, whether it's how I handle my money, because it's all defects. And even at almost 10 years sober, I'm very defective. I'm very selfish. And I have to be kind of looking at that with my sponsor to be able to get to a place where I can see I'm so delusional in my thinking. And so negative that I can just think that things are fine or that, you know, this is a horrible setup or whatever it is, you know. And really it's just my own head. And then if I can, you know, talk with my sponsor about what's going on with me or my trusted friends, you know, the women in AA that know me and things like that, I can really get to a place where I don't have to live that way in my own head. And I'm trying to think of some other good stories here. I'm like halfway. You know, amends. I still have amends left to do. I've done some financial amends, and like I said, my sister and I have made amends. I made amends with my dad, and I sat down and made amends with my mom, and that's a relationship I still have to work on, and I try to go to lunch with her maybe 4 or 5 times a year, because it's really, my serenity has to be in place for me to be able to show up there, and that, I don't know if that sounds harsh or not, but it's like, for me, I can't show up in a positive way if I'm not spiritually prepared to go into that, because it's very easy, you know, in the goading process for me to get a little fired up and want to say something, and it sets back my relationship there, you know what I mean? And last year, my mother was very sick and probably still is, you know, and we made some trips to the hospital to see her. And if I had not done the work with my sponsor that I had done and do the talking with my sister that I had done, I would have not, you know, been able to show up appropriately. You know, my mom's yelling at me and whatever in the hospital, and that's not, you know what I mean, that doesn't matter how she reacts. It doesn't matter what she says to me, how she says it. It's that I have to show up as a daughter because, you know, when I was drinking, I did things like I said, wreck her house. You know, I would go into her pocketbook, and she didn't really carry a lot of cash, so I would take a check out of the middle of her checkbook and write it out to cash and sign everything and fill it out and take it to a liquor store and cash it, you know, and just run her into the ground because, I had to have what I had to have, you know, in these relationships. When I was drinking, there's another girl I had had an apartment with for a few months, and I decided that I wasn't happy with how things were going. I dipped out. Meanwhile, she had paid all of her rent up front, and I had been paying her. Well, there was a credit. Well, I found out about it. So I paid my rent and left her with her portion. Didn't tell her that I had only paid, like, half the rent because I used her credit, you know, on the rent. And just had, like, moved out in the middle of an afternoon. You know what I mean? Not a word or anything like that. And over this past year, I'd sent her a couple of letters because I managed to track her address. A friend of mine is usually pretty good at tracking people down, and I managed to get an address for her and wrote her a letter. And I was so shocked at what I got back. This woman didn't want the money. She didn't want, you know, she was glad that I was doing well. She told me a little bit about her life. And she was still living in those apartments, you know what I mean? And for me, it's like, I don't understand that, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think she's alcoholic, because my reaction is one of selfishness. Yes, I want my money. You know what I mean? I want you to take care of what you owe me. But this woman was just so sweet, and she was like, I don't want your money. I'm glad that you're doing well. How's your mom? How's your sister? You know what I mean? And while I'm glad the amends went well, it's definitely like a knife in my chest of the level of selfishness that I have in my life, that I'm more concerned about sending this woman a check than how she's doing and how, you know, having a real relationship with her. And I have sent her letters, but she works the night shift and has a couple of kids, and so it's not really a place where I can show up in that way, but it was nice to be able to correspond with her via a letter and remember the actions that I'm capable of taking. You know, even today, I can be that way. And, wow, I thought it stopped for a second. I was like, okay, I am over. No. I thought I was maybe out of time there. Wow, I've never, you guys jinxed me talking about Crystal for the meeting, and now I'm going very short tonight. I guess I'll really try to go through some of my step work. You know, for me, I guess I sort of touched on the 10th step. My 11th step, I really, you know, when my last sponsor died, I started going back to church, the church of my youth, you know, and that's not something, you know, I had an attitude about it when I got here. I would tell you that, you know, very smugly and self-righteously, that church was for people who didn't want to go to hell, and that A is for people who've already been there. And so I don't need to go there, and you don't have to talk to me about it, and I don't want to put on my Sunday best and go to Mass. You know what I mean? I'm fine. I'm going to go to the meeting. Thank you. You know what I mean? And we get so upset when my dad would even suggest that I go there. You know, and not that I really had a resentment with God, but I felt like, I know what it says. You know, I went to Sunday school, and I'm pretty sure he's not very pleased with me right now. And even though I'm one of his kids, I get it. He loves me. But he's not really going to go out of his way to do anything for me now. You know, even though I'm sober, that's great. And the best I can hope to do is take enough good actions to try to combat some of the bad ones and maybe see how this balance sheet works out, you know. And over time, you know, my relationship with the higher power has grown and changed, and obviously, you know, a lot of people talk about when I came into the program, it was the group. It was all these people that were sober and happy, and I felt like, trying to look for, like, an appropriate word to use there. I felt like poop, and so, you know what I mean? And so I thought, well, all these people, you know, surely have a better solution than I, and it was the group, it was AA, you know, and I had to kind of widen that as the years have gone, and I think it will continue to widen in its meaning and how I think about it, and I think it's something that's personal for everybody, but I don't think it really stays static. I think it's something that grows with you and kind of has to with your life, and, you know, so I had been going back to church and trying to look at that for, like, more spiritual guidance and trying to really work with prayer and meditation to get these, like, intuitive thoughts. And they don't always come, and they're not necessarily about me. I can get them about other people or, you know, someone, so-and-so doesn't seem like they're doing well, or an intuitive thought to call someone or whatever it is, and it's the right call at the right moment, and I don't know how or why. But, you know, that's been a really awesome experience for me. And, you know, just thinking back over the differences between, like, my drinking and my life today, I don't know how you get to one from the other. I'm someone who, had no care or concern. I would tell you that I love so-and-so and that so-and-so is valuable to me, but my behavior didn't support that. You know, my behavior would say that I cared if I was going to get in trouble, if you're going to be mad at me, you know what I mean? But I still was going to do what I wanted to do. And today that's not the case. I have relationships that are based on, you know, true partnerships and relationships with other people, whether it's my sponsor or my family or my friends, where my concern is that I do value this person and I want to make sure that, you know, that things are going well for them, and if they need help, that I'm there for them. And that's not something that I would have done, you know. Like I said, when I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 80 pounds. It was yellow. I had nothing, felt nothing. You know, I was a shell of a person. And today I can tell you that, you know, I have a job. I have a place to live. I live with sober people. You know, I go to my job every day. I go, you know, I have service positions at meetings. I go to school, which is unheard of for someone like me, you know, that I can actually pay my bills, like, on time out of my own bank account with my own money that I put there, you know, which is, to think about it, is so crazy. I've never been able to, you know, have that level of adult responsibility to be able to do things like that. You know, I paid my dad. You know, I've worked on paying off debts. When I moved in with my dad, he didn't charge me rent, but he made me pay back a lot of things that I owed, you know. And I managed to pay off that car and buy another one on my own, you know, without a co-signer and without, you know, getting money from my family, which is something I don't really do today. I don't ask my dad for money. I don't take money from my mom, you know. I don't want to live that way. I want to be fully self-supporting on my own. And I've been able to do that, and that's not, you know, the purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous, to, you know, get me money or a job or, you know, whatever. But I can tell you that when I came in, all I wanted to do was be able to sleep at night, really sleep, because that's something that I did not do. I would pass out or, you know, whatever, do enough of whatever I was doing to achieve unconsciousness and not feel like such a piece of garbage about myself. You know, and those things have happened, and they're still continuing to happen. You know, when I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing and not living in negativity and resentment, I sleep great. You know, and I definitely, through the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't have to feel that way about myself. If I'm taking a steamable action in my whole life, like it talks about in the 12th step, you know, not just at the meeting where people are seeing me and I want to look good, but like at work, on the train, which is a big one for me, in the metro rail system, you know, at home with my roommates, everywhere that I go, if I can maintain a level of principled behavior, I don't have to feel bad about myself or think about, you know, what I said or did yesterday. It doesn't have to weigh in my mind, like when I would wake up drinking, thinking about what did I say, what did I do, where was I. You know, those things, those aren't demons that haunt me today. You know, I know where, when I wake up tomorrow, I'll know where I was today, you know, and who I was with, and that I did the best that I could to act like, you know, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous in good standing, you know, and that despite how I feel sometimes, I can suit up and show up, you know, and there have been times like that I've had in my sobriety. My sobriety hasn't just been, like rainbows and lollipops, you know what I mean? There have been things that have happened that have rocked me to the core of you know, my being. And I don't recall very often in any of those times thinking about drinking, you know, which is a testament to Alcoholics Anonymous. I've thought about, okay, I'm going to have to call all these women and cry on the phone with them, or, you know what I mean? Would take some serious action at inventorying and getting past whatever this is. Getting other people's experience with things to get through what's going on, and I've been injured and sick in sobriety, and people have shown up for me in a way that I've never seen anywhere else. You know, I had, you know, injured my neck a little bit several years ago. I had people showing up to my house, baking my cookies for the meeting, doing my laundry, taking me to doctor's appointments. You know what I mean? Like whatever it was, like people were showing up to take me and get things taken care of. And it's a gift, and I get to do that for other people, you know, when other people need help. And this thing is not moving at all. You know, but my life is a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. I could not live the life I live today, like I said, without a sponsor, without a sobriety, without a home group, without working the steps and being interested in living a different way of life, you know. I tried, you know, not drinking or being dry, you know, before I got here, and it still wasn't, it wasn't the same. It wasn't, you know, going to be the way I was going to do it. I know that, you know, the book talks about there are many ways to get sober and live a happy life, and this is the only one that I found, and I am sorry that I am ending so early, but I've literally said anything I could possibly think of, so I'm sorry, but thank you.